Log Talk Radio.
Bonjour, mes amis, ça va bien? Oh, I hope we're all ça va bien-ing tonight. Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunchen, and I'm coming to you live right now on Come Now, Don't Sulk. That's our live podcast. I don't know who's moving furniture in the background, but in the studio. But we are coming to you live, can you imagine, on our podcast, and we're part of the Here Be Monsters studio on Blog Talk Radio Network. And we are so excited to be here. We're here every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. And listen, darlings, can you imagine? You are part of a worldwide audience because that's our technology now. My goodness, when I started in television, there were three networks, and half of it was broadcast with two coffee cans and a string. I mean, here we are. Anybody with a laptop or a telephone can tune into a broadcast that they're listening to in Australia, Germany, Argentina, Uruguay, Madagascar, and Sri Lanka. So we are here, as I said, with Come Now, Don't Sulk, and we have my sponsor and my muse and my fabulous, fabulous, she's everything. She's our producer. She's the founder of DaughtersOfIsis.com, and that's our main sponsor. Would you please welcome Gwendolyn Holdenberry. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
I'm great tonight. How are you all up there? I take it you're off the shore there.
Now, listen, if I had booked the SS Minnow with the captain and Gilligan, they could literally leave, ladies and gentlemen at home, Port St. Lucie, which is where Gwendolyn is right now, and after a three-day tour, they would arrive up here at Fire Island, because Mummy is on Fire Island right now, specifically in Cherry Grove. So I'm broadcasting live from Cherry Grove, and which is gayer than gay, and Gwendolyn is broadcasting simultaneously from Port St. Lucie, which, though not completely gay, certainly has a faggy enough name. Port St. Lucie, I mean, wasn't St. Lucie the patron saint of flower arranging and eyebrow waxing or something? Something like that. Gwendolyn, I want to let everyone know that DaughtersOfIsis.com, that's all one word, DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors, is our sponsor. And Gwendolyn is the founder of that as well as this show. And she is also the head chemist. She's the fragranceologist or the odorologist or the whatever. Do you have a fragrance for us that we should be checking out on online at daughtersofisis.com? I know you have 500 products there, but what would be fabulous for this end of June, beginning of July?
Well, with the heat coming up, Mummy, I'm going to suggest a good old favorite, my Quantum Shift mist.
I happen to love Quantum Shifts.
It clears the dross energies prior to any kind of healing work, but it shifts your whole being. It clears you mentally. It's very fresh, and it's a blend of lemongrass with sandalwood. And pink grapefruit, white grapefruit, there's a little mugwort in it, there's lemon in it. It's just very fresh. And with the sandalwood and mugwort being a little base to it, so it's not topping fresh, you know. Those grapefruits, that pink grapefruit, boy, we get good pink grapefruit. It's just stunning because it chew, and I'll tell you, ladies, if you're going through those certain days on down the road where you get up in the middle of the night and there's just flashing, 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 it stops the hot flash in its pace. So it's wonderful. It's a very healing, and I'm told by certain people that it's a wonderful mist to use to actually clear negative people. people from your area too. So there's that.
Well, that is a recommendation for these days right now. That is a high recommendation. I have to say, that's hysterical. I have to say that I happen to love Quantum Shift, and I love it so much. I really adore it. And I also have purchased it and used it as an incredible cocktail, which Gwendolyn didn't know. I wear a little behind my ears, and then I have been known to make a wonderful martini with it because I just can't resist all of those ingredients. By the way, stirred, not shaken. Don't bruise it if you decide to go that route.
Oh, God.
And don't use an olive. It should be a lemon peel and possibly a maraschino cherry, but I would say just get Quantum Shift. It is a wonderful, wonderful fragrance.
Is that a gay martini? A lemon peel and a cherry? Like a gay martini. I love it.
Yes. Well, actually, I've named it. I call it the Mary Teeny because it's Mary Teeny. So it's fabulous. So, darlings, you feel free to drink it because it'll be fine. By the way, Gwendolyn, you being the astrologer in the house and the astronomer, our house astronomer and astrologer, if I'm not mistaken, this is our first show of the summer, technically. Isn't that true? Because we just began summer a couple of days ago.
Summer solstice was on the 20th.
Yeah.
And, we're a week into summer, and down here seems it's a little bit cooler than it is in places like Oregon and parts of New England. So,
well, that's
I'm
the
like,
world is coming to an end. Yeah, it's very disturbing when you hear that. That is very startling.
God.
That, you know, the climates are shifting.
126 degrees in the desert, and I'm like, wow. And anybody who tells you, but it's a dry heat, well, you could just sock them in the nose for me.
Go on. Yeah.
No, I was just saying, that's really bad. No, I'm pulling back.
I just would like to say this, and we're going to get on a happy subject in just a second. But I would like to, first of all, I have to invite people. Folks, you can call in, and we encourage you to call in. Our number is 323-784-9639. That's 323-784-9639. I wish it spelled something, but it doesn't. Mummy's had telephone numbers that actually spelled things, but this one doesn't happen to. So 323-784-9639. Please call in. Join us in conversation. I'm going to mention our topic tonight. I always keep it open, but I thought I would come up with a topic tonight apropos of where we are and the month we're in. But I would like to just remind people, and I don't want to get into a negative thing or a down thing, but with the heat wave and with it being June and now July, I would like to remind people, really, really, it's been way too long for us to have to keep reminding people. Folks, no children, no animals, not even houseplants left in cars. Do not run an errand. Do not go into McDonald's or Starbucks. Do not go visit your boss. Don't drive into work and run into your boss and say, I'm only going to spend 5 minutes. I'll be right back. Don't leave an animal in a car. Do not leave a child in a car. Do not even leave an African violet in a car. Don't leave anything in a car. And don't crack the window. The cracked windows don't mean anything. The temperature still soars. And if you don't believe me, try it. Sit in your car in a parking lot on blacktop with the window cracked and see how long you can take it. No, no, I said capital N-O. And I'm sick to death of hearing news stories from different parts of the country on the internet or seeing them infant dies in Oregon and a dog dies in Boston. And it's ridiculous. We all know that it doesn't work. It doesn't work. And frankly, I'm tired of the accident excuse. It's like, well, it was an accident. There's no accident. Anyone who leaves a child in a car now, they should be investigated for having been like trying to dispose of their child. It's just ridiculous. And these stories are such old news. I'm begging you, never, ever, ever leave an animal, a child, even a plant in a car. And by the way, if you are prone to lapses of memory, which is inexcusable in this case, then put a post-it note on your dashboard right in front of you or on your easy pass somewhere on your rearview mirror that says, check the back seat. Because I keep hearing parents say, oh, I forgot that the baby was in the car. I thought I'd left it at home. You left it at home with who? You left your baby at home with the babysitter that never showed up? I mean, what does that mean? You're an idiot is what it means. So, you know, if you don't want to be arrested for child or animal abuse, you put a post-it up that says, look behind you. Because these people that keep saying, oh, I forgot the dog wasn't at home. The dog was in the back seat. It's like, no, go to hell. Okay? Just go to hell. So these stories are shocking. So let's all agree, no more children, animals, anyone, anything left in a car in heat. And these heat waves are brutal. So, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I got to tell you, the operators are pinging me because we have three people waiting as callers.
Good.
So,
good. Let's invite them all in.
Okay. Let me open your – I'm opening your mics, callers.
And I'll let you ask who they are. You can introduce them.
Well, 716 area code. Welcome.
That's Pamela.
I thought
Pamela,
so.
How are you?
And
okay. And who's our other caller?
Our other caller is 442 area code. Who would that be?
This is Michael. Michael Elsinius from Palm Springs.
Michael,
hi,
welcome,
Michael.
Welcome.
Thank
and
you.
And
here's
our third caller.
Time.
I know, and we will welcome you. And we have a special initiation thing in which we dunk you in marshmallow fluff and spank you, but that'll be coming in just a second. And who's our third caller?
I love it. Our third caller is my other co-host on the other show. I know that
Wayne.
Wayne Johnson. Greetings, all. greetings.
First of all, what a lovely way to spend a summer night, a Monday night, with a lovely panel, including a newcomer, two regulars, and a newcomer, which is wonderful. Michael, you're calling from, you said Palm Springs?
Palm Springs, yes.
How's your weather?
So I just want to ask you that. So what, you're a new caller, you've never been here before. What motivated you to call in for the first time?
We've been chatting back and forth for some time online. We have some mutual friends and, I just, noticed it in Facebook and I decided, you know what? I'm going to call in. So
I'm thrilled you did.
Great.
Decided to do it. So am I. Yes.
I was going to suggest a topic tonight because sometimes we have no callers and sometimes we have one caller and whatever, but I'm going to suggest a caller and I wanted to squeak it in just at the end of June with Pride Month. And I thought it might be nice, even though many people's Pride festivals and parades and, you know, parties and whatever, are coming to an end or have passed already. I wanted to ask people, callers, I think what I'd like to do is, first of all, you can do whatever you want, but what I think would be interesting is what was your first impression of hearing about a Pride parade of any sort, either locally or on the news? When was it, and what was your who, what, where, when, and why was your first experience with the notion that gay and lesbian LGBTQ pride would be celebrated in the world we're in? Is that someone belching or barking?
No, they're my Basset hounds that every day about this time they have a what we refer to as a hootenanny howl off. And I've put them in another room, and hopefully they'll calm down in a minute.
Okay. So why don't we start with who would like to start on that who, what, where, when, why was your first experience and feelings about the first LGBTQ parade and festival that you ever heard of or experienced? When and what year was it? Who would like to start?
I'll jump in. I'm the resident heterosexual, but the I was out in Columbus, and actually my wife was out visiting me. We were still at her the farm here in Maryland, and but the work was in Columbus, and they had every year when I was out there was the Stonewall Parade is what they titled it, and I have a niece who is a lesbian.
And what year was that, Wayne?
That would have been probably about five years ago now.
Oh, really?
And there was
that
all
recently?
Downtown.
Okay.
There's the Art District. They call it Short North. If you follow Short North Road, it takes you right past the University of Ohio, Ohio State University and stuff. And but you go more towards the downtowns, towards the state buildings and stuff. That's where your Art District is, and there'll be you know, it's old brick buildings, but they've painted some beautiful murals on the bricks and stuff. And but anyway, you know, I just wanted to went down there to kind of see and kind of give a support of those that were down there and enjoy and watch the parade. And I told Glenn this one time on our show is you know, I heard some of the catty moments like, oh, no, her makeup's all wrong.
Yeah, gays are impossible, aren't they? That's just, yeah.
I was going to say, should you be supportive? I don't care. You know, her eye line's too dark. You know?
Right.
What's going on? But, yeah, that would be probably my actually interacting with something like that, yes. I mean,
so that
I
was the first.
Gays and,
okay, that was the first
yeah,
parade that you ever saw in person?
That would be correct, yes, yes.
Okay, but what was the first time that you ever heard of a gay pride parade or any sort of public celebration of lesbians and gays and transgender, that crowd,
oh,
what was the first time? And, like, was it in the news? Was it on, you know,
oh, yes, it would have been,
Walter
yes,
Cronkite's
so
Evening
news?
What was
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it would have been the nightly news, something like that. That would have been maybe, I don't know, help me out here, maybe 20 years ago or something.
Only 20 years ago. Okay, that's good to know.
Well, I've got a good one. I was 1992. I was casting off my Catholic guilt and coming out. And I had opened with my sister daughter's Vices in Pompano Beach. And the parade to be at was in Wilton Manors, which is in part of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I had never heard of a gay pride. I was part of that up in the 70s. I mean, I really didn't understand that there was. So a lot of people I knew were down there, and we interacted with the LGBTQ community quite a bit through the store. And I wrote a column for the Lesbian Magazine, which was called The Fountain, down right on Wilton Drive there. And all of my folks, my little brother, Asa, who is, you know, he's my little brother partner, business partner, you know, good friend who's gay, said, we got to do the Pride March. And so we went down and we were spirit for the parade.
I'm on a phone.
It was really wonderful. And the same people who were family then are family still. So it was great. It was wonderful experience.
And Gwendolyn, this was only 20 years ago.
This was 1992.
Oh, so 30 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah.
Gwendolyn,
so
I just want to stop for a second. I want to insist that you stop lying about your age. You're as old as I am. We're both 148. So I don't lie about my age, and it's time that you have to surrender and say, I'm a woman. I'm a lesbian woman. I'm a 148-year-old woman. I look in the mirror, and I accept it, and I'm proud. I'm out. I'm loud. I'm proud, and et cetera. Okay?
Okay.
All these notions of like...
I never lie about my age, and I was only 17.
That's right. I've never been kissed.
That's so funny.
Those digits are reversed, ladies and gentlemen at home. All right, Michael, let's hear from our newcomer. Michael, when was your first experience of, like, first of all, first hearing
right.
about a gay and lesbian parade? Like,
yeah.
like I, and then we'll find out about your first one where you were at it or in it.
Sure.
But tell us where what your experience was. And if you want to reveal your age then or not, you can
sure.
tell us what the
sure. –
give us the details.
Absolutely. It was in 1969 or 1970, I think, when I first heard about a gay pride parade. And I was a senior in high school. I'm 68 years old, or I will be in 2 weeks now. But that was the first time that I had really heard. I mean, I knew about gay, and I knew about, sort of knew about being gay. But I didn't realize that anyone actually celebrated it,
wow.
you know.
Right.
And that's when I first heard about it on the news, actually. I was living in Chicago, born and raised in Chicago, and I heard about it on the evening news, the local evening news, about this gay pride parade. And I thought, oh, my gosh. I was so surprised. That people actually took to the street and were proud of being who they were. So it was a big turning point, really, I think,
yeah.
in the way that I looked at being gay. I was not out. I certainly acted on it, but I wasn't out at that point. But it
and,
really
Michael, where were
help.
You again? Where were you living? You were
Chicago.
In Chicago.
Correct.
Well, you had
yes.
it a lot easier than a lot of other people. Not to,
yeah.
I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm just saying
no,
that it, at that
yeah.
time, Chicago was as gay as you
yeah.
were going to get. If between
oh, yeah.
New York City and San Francisco, that was as gay as you were going to get. And by the way,
that's
Chicago
it.
Sort of got a monopoly on the leather crowd because that
yeah.
sort of became the place
IML
where men and women could,
so
who were gay could
here.
Be leather
yep.
crowd. So,
right.
yeah, yeah. And
that's
by the way,
cool
it was June 29th.
I mean,
it was June 29th, 1970, because it was
yes.
the year to the day after the Stonewall riots, which was 1969. So you were 1970.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. The first
yes.
one. And it did make the national news. It was shocking.
It, did.
Yeah.
It was just it was huge for
yes.
me and for, I think, all of us, you know, in the gay community, those particular years. But I do yes. feel extremely blessed to have been where I was
yeah.
during my growing up, you know, because
yeah.
I didn't have a great deal of, you know, the problems and the barriers that I put in place, nobody else did. Because, well, you know, there still was a certain amount of, you know, whether it be at school or whether it was out in public, there still was some negative stuff going on, but
yes,
not as much certainly in Chicago than anywhere else, a smaller town.
When did you
so
leave Chicago, by the way?
Where I was, yeah.
When
yeah.
did you leave Chicago?
I left Chicago in 78 and went to New York City in 78, but before then, it was the following year, so it would have been, no, yeah, not the following year, maybe 2 years after I had heard about a gay pride parade, I actually went down to what's referred to as Boys Town in Chicago, Halsted Street, and
right.
decided with a friend of mine that we were going to just check it out, you know, and see.
Well,
what
when did Chicago have its first gay pride parade? Do you remember?
I don't remember when the actual first organized parade was.
Uh-huh.
It was probably close to that time.
Okay. And when was when and where was the first parade that you saw in person you know, was it there or was it another one?
Yeah, it was there in Chicago, and I think it was 74 or 75 was my first parade. And it was relatively small, but it was, you know, most of the local gay bars had a float, and a few community organizations like the Howard Brown Health Center, that's the, LGBTQ health center for the area had a presence, and some of the
And it might have been fairly spontaneous because a lot of towns, well, first of all, New York City, I don't believe, if I remember correctly, New York City, that 1970 parade, that was, I believe, although it was, I know it was planned secretly among the gay community and the participants, but it was, quote unquote, spontaneous. And I believe, if I remember the stories from the people that were friends of mine and everything who were in it, they said that they did not have a permit and that they had simply, you know, collected and suddenly had posters and everything and banners and a marching band or whatever, and they were marching down the avenue, and the police did not, they did not interfere because it was already something that was such bad press for the police and such bad press for the conservative wing of the country that they sort of said, well, they're not breaking anything and they're not doing anything, so let's just let them sort of do it and sort of make sure they stay actually in a parade as opposed to spilling out over, you know, 48 blocks and spreading across the island. Let's keep them in a parade. Let's let them have the parade. I would have to research that, but I think that it was spontaneous, and I believe that some of those other parades, like in Chicago and everything, were semi-spontaneous.
Semi-spontaneous. Yeah, I remember that there was still traffic going down the street.
So you
sort of had to avoid the traffic as much as possible if you were actually in the parade. And the street was not blocked off compared to today where, you know, for a day ahead of time, the streets are blocked off and, you know, people are already getting their seats and that sort of thing.
Right.
But,
although it's interesting
was.
Because New York's parade, even though the world is getting better or whatever or more accepting, New York's parade has been basically castrated. It is a shadow of what it was years ago when I was in it every year. I kept being in it for year after year after year. And the parade now is a forlorn whisper of what it was back then. So it's kind of odd how it's changed so much. And the politics has changed, but then the actual parade itself has been truncated and just turned into this wet fart as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly, and not fun at all. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, it used to be just a big party. Now it's so commercialized.
Well, that's the other thing. It's been Disney-fied. Yeah. I call it Disney-fied.
Yeah, exactly.
It's become it's kind of like a sad version of Mardi Gras. It's not even, it's kind of weird what's happened to it. I want to get
it's
some
like
other.
New York itself, you know. New York itself is very
Exactly.
I mean,
I want to get, Pamela, what was your first experience and when and where of hearing about it and then actually seeing or participating? Two-part question.
Well, hearing about it, I was up in Western New York, Buffalo, New York, and hearing about it, it was back in 1988 that it was on the news, but it wasn't a parade. It was just, it was called the Pride Unity Festival. And it was called Power Through Unity with Diversity.
And this was in Buffalo?
In Buffalo, 1988. So it was more workshops and concerts and stuff like that that was being held. The actual first parade I went to wasn't until 1991, which was the actual first gay pride parade in Buffalo. So that was the first parade that I went to and participated. But the workshop, they did like workshops just to start getting out there, I guess.
May I ask, how to be gay? Or
well, no, like
now boys and girls,
they called
Brown
them
tent, The brown tent has pottery throw and loom skills if you're a weaver. And then the red tent is how to be gay and or just to get your toe in the water comfortably.
So. Right. No, they called them workshops. It was more just a social mingle kind of thing for different groups of people. I mean, the gay and lesbian youth group sponsored a ride on the Miss Buffalo boat. So that they called that a workshop on the Miss Buffalo boat that you could, you know, go and learn the history of the, you know, all of that. And then they did concerts at the Trelf Amador Cafe. We called it the Trelf, the Good Neighbors Corral, and I remember this name because it just stuck with me. The Dyke Tones performed.
Gwendolyn, you lived in Buffalo, didn't you, for a while?
No, I had a little house in Watkinson. I went to school at Cornell, and I lived in New York City for a while, too.
Okay.
Rochester is where I was born.
Rochester,
but
I'm sorry.
I went in and out of Buffalo, of course, quite a bit, you know.
Well, yeah, I didn't mean to derail Pamela's story. I'd forgotten it was Rochester and not Buffalo. And Pamela, so... That's fascinating because that's an interesting piece of trivia in history, was that Buffalo had workshops and almost like a street fair, festival, workshops, whatever, before it had a parade, as opposed to the reverse, where they had a parade and then eventually they sort of immersed the community in workshops and a county fair version of being gay. So were you in the parade when the first parade?
I was in the parade.
And what were you on, a float or in a?
I was.
Did you march?
No,
were you?
Just kidding.
Were you politicized? Or? Pamela, were you angry and carrying a banner and a sickle and a scythe, or were you on a float with a bouquet and a sash?
No, I was on the float. I was, you know, on one of the floats. I can't remember 1991 what title I had at that time because I was a pageant queen.
It must be nice to be so successful in the pageant world to not remember which title. How I wish I could have been like that. I used to look at girls like you from the sidelines and say, oh, if only I could win a tiara and a nice ribbon with glitter on it. And it must be amazing to have won so many titles that you don't remember which title it was. God, I would have been just happy to be Miss Peach Pie, or Miss Chocolate Croissant, or Miss Mahjong Champ, or something. I mean, my God!
I believe I was Miss Sweetheart of Buffalo and Southern Ontario at the time.
Oh, that's fabulous! That's fabulous. Were people nice to you on your parade? Like, were there hecklers, or were people mostly waving and cheering to you and being nice?
Well, it wasn't when the first parade wasn't overly populated, I'll say. It was a short parade route, so we only went from, like, maybe a mile from City Hall and went down the street. There weren't a lot of floats, per se, maybe about 10.
But were there onlookers? There were people that stopped and watched.
There were people that watched. I mean, there were supporters that watched. And then, of course, you had the Bible beaters when we passed the churches out there with their hate signs and, you know, the whole nine yards. And
right. So there were there was some heckling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Michael, how about your parade? When you were at parades, did you see – obviously you saw supporters and people waving, but did you have any incidents or any hecklers or anything that were, you know, a downer? Is Michael still on?
Yeah. Michael.
Oh, I'm sorry. I put myself on mute. Yes, there were in Chicago, and, you know, it was such a happy, fun time, though, for the participants, that it just sort of overshadowed all of that. And frankly,
wait, the happiness overshadowed. The happiness overshadowed the hecklers, or the hecklers?
The heckler. Yes, yeah.
The hecklers
and,
deflated the joy.
Yeah, it didn't. We just didn't permit that to happen.
Oh, good. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
So, and frankly, I do remember a couple of instances where the participants in the parade actually sort of, took out after the hecklers on the sidelines and chased them away. So,
wow.
Yeah, but that, again, was many, many years ago in Chicago. So, not so in New York. Had moved to New York and participated in the parade in New York City. So, I mean, that was an entirely different thing.
And what year was that?
The first one was in, I think it was 80, maybe, I think.
Uh-huh.
Early 80s, I would think.
Uh-huh. Was it before AIDS? Was it right before AIDS broke?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Yeah, the parade took on a very dramatic change.
Totally different.
As did everything. As did everything.
Yep.
When AIDS happens, and it mm-hmm. when AIDS really kicked in 82, 83, 84, that was when those years began to change everything, from the discos, the big dance clubs, Fire Island, everything. Everything changed in New York, and it was so sad because LGBTQ, of course, it was just lesbian and gay back then. They didn't do the transgender and all of that yet. But gay and lesbian liberation had really taken off in the 70s with the clubs and everything. It was like, oh, this is going to be a different world. And it got better and better and better. And then you started actually having gay characters appear on television, like you'd have it would be a punchline on Archie Bunker on All in the Family. Archie's friend, who had been a football jock in high school and everything, turned out as the punchline of the show, he turned out to be gay. And Archie was thunderstruck that this man's man, handsome, middle-aged guy turned out to be gay and had been gay all along. In Mary Tyler Moore, Phyllis's brother turned out to be gay as the punchline of the show. So there were these moments where perfectly lovely characters were turning out to be gay as a punchline.
I think Lars was gay too.
You think what?
Lars was gay too.
but I think so too.
Well, Mommy, think of what you did with your persona. You know,
well,
sort of
you mean in the
juxtaposition
parade?
of you in a fabulous ball gown.
Well,
flexing
the first
your
parade
muscles.
I did, the first parade I actually was in a float was in 1985. And I was told by friends I was going to be, because of the gay cable network. So I was doing the gay cable network, which was brand new. And I was in the back. I was sitting on the boot or whatever it's called of a convertible covered with deflating purple and pink balloons.
I remember that.
The balloons were all like these flaccid condoms. They were balloons, but they were becoming these like sad, sperm-filled, melting balloon things falling over that had been scotch taped all over Lou Miletta's sad old Buick convertible, 1968 convertible. And I was sitting up on the boot, and of course I was melting. I was in a black and white polka dot. I was a white polka dot dress white dress with black polka dots. And it was, with a strapless and everything, whatever. And I was flexing and doing all that. And my makeup, I looked like I had been entertaining in Nagasaki. My makeup literally was melting down my face. I looked like I had looked at the atomic weapon that had been dropped. I mean, it was tragic. It was tragic. The temperature was 900 degrees.
Uh-huh.
And that was the old parade route. That was from 70th Street. For you New Yorkers, it was from West 70th and Central Park West, where all these floats, and this is back when there were a million people in the parade, even though the New York Times claimed it was only 5,000. They set up all the way back up into the 80s, and they were all on the side streets there. And, the side streets were filled
with marching bands, floats, everything you could imagine. And we set up, we went down Central Park West to Columbus Circle. So that's the Time Warner building now, but at that time it was the old Coliseum. We turned left onto Central Park South. We went across 59th Street to the Plaza Hotel. We made a right on Fifth Avenue, and we went all the way down Fifth Avenue to Washington Square Park, went across to Christopher Street, and then went all the way down to the pier on Hudson where they had the street festivals and everything. Now, that parade took 5 hours.
It was forever.
And, I mean, some cars would literally have cans of gasoline in the trunk so that they could refill because it was like, you know, bad mileage back then. And it took so long. I mean, people's cars were overheating. It took forever. You could walk it faster than a car could move it. That's how big the parade was. So I was in the back flexing, and I'll tell you two quick things. Good news, bad news. The bad news was that I was told by friends that I should under no circumstances be in the convertible, be open like that, because there was a chance I could be shot and killed.
Oh, my.
I was stunned.
I actually laughed.
In the face of the people that told me that. This was at the gym that I worked out at, Sheridan Square. And they came up to me and they said, we're begging you not to be in this parade. You can't be in this parade. There's way too much resentment. There's too much strangeness right now. AIDS, first of all, gay lib has not been, you know, accepted by straight people, A. And B, we're all seen as plague carriers. So it was one thing to be child molesters and animal abusers, you know, pederasts and whatever. But now we are seen as disease-carrying monsters. Mm-hmm. And you are going to be so public in such a way. This is before bodybuilders were walking around with tambourines. It wasn't it wasn't as Michael said, it wasn't as carnival as it was later. Like in the 90s, it became, you know, and in 2000, it became more about like a festival of like Mardi Gras, you know, people throwing Mardi Gras beads. This was, it was a little bit less, there weren't so many muscle creatures in evening gowns. So it was like what I was doing was in your face. And my friends were afraid that I could be punished for it.
Sure.
So it was interesting, and I had not thought of it. I'm so dumb, you know. Mummy is smart in some ways, but I'm really stupid. Yeah. When I'm stupid, I'm really stupid. And I looked at them, I said, no, are you joking? And they said, no, you could, some lunatic with a gun could decide you are the daughter of Satan. You are everything that's wrong with this country, and I'm blowing your brains out in front of national news. So that was the other thing. The good news is this, and I'll tell this story very quickly. We hit Washington Square Park. First of all, I had been on cable TV, and we learned that there were people in the mayor's mansion, that there were people at the Metropolitan Museum and the Modern Museum of Art. We learned that cable television, that in fact Marshall McLuhan was right, that television was going to be the biggest equalizer of all phenomenon in society through all history. Television would be in everyone's home, and that meant that anybody – could see anything anytime they wanted. And this was at the beginning of cable. So having said that, so the fan mail and everything that had been coming in, the boxes of chocolate, the bouquets of roses, everything, you know, I'd been photographed by Scavullo and everything. It was like within 4 weeks of the show starting, it was like, oh my God, this was a bigger phenomenon than anyone had thought. And it was nose pick. Cable. This was being done on a budget of $11 when there were only 10 channels. This wasn't like Netflix and everything. Anyway, the whole parade route, people were screaming, Sybil, Sybil. People were stopping the car and coming up and making me do photographs with them and you know, flexing and everything. My forearms were completely ruined by the end of the day. I had insulin in my arms and everything. I was crippled for like 2 weeks afterwards because I had been flexing literally for 5 hours. To make a long story short, we hit Washington Square Park. And by that time, by the time you'd hit 30th Street and 23rd Street, the crowds were gigantic. So they'd been big all the way. But by that time, the crowds were backed into the streets. It was huge, a sea of people. We hit Washington Square Park, and you can only fit so many people in Washington Square Park, but you're talking thousands. And we're moving along, and the police are being lovely. So we had no problems with police at all. But we made that right on Central, on Washington Square Park. And literally, people were hanging off the arch. I don't know how they had climbed up into it. There were people upstairs throwing confetti, everything. Banners, confetti from balconies along Fifth Avenue. We turn right. And at that point, because that street there, Washington Square North, is like 12 feet wide, we literally were slowly brushing people out of the way with the car. It was like they had spilled into the street and the police were trying to get people back. And at one point, people were screaming and yelling, "Sybil, Sybil, oh, we love gay cable network, Sybil." And suddenly,
I love it.
On my left, a woman, a Hispanic woman, is holding a toddler in her outstretched hands. She was cantilevered. And she literally surrounded. She was being supported by the crowd around her. She held the child to me. She said, "No, I'm in a tiara. I'm looking the way I look. I'm in a strapless black bustier with a white tulle dress with black polka dots, black opera gloves, necklace, jewelry." And she reaches out and in broken English says, "Por favor, por favor, bless me, bless my child, bless my child." Everyone in the car was like, it was just, yes, it was sweet, but it was like, what, did she think she was at the Feast of San Gennaro? I mean, I kept thinking, wait a minute, this is a nice Puerto Rican lady who's seeing thousands of people rush to a place somewhere. She sees parade floats going by and cars, and she sees a, shall we say, athletic woman, a mannish-looking woman in the back of a car flexing, not even making the sign of the cross. I don't have a halo. I don't have like I don't have the Virgin Mary's blue shroud over my head. There's nothing. I'm not holding a statue of Jesus. I'm a vanished woman flexing her muscles with a 48-inch chest and a 29-inch waist. And her response is, bless me and my child, bless my child. And she kept going, and she was laughing and smiling. It was like, bless my child. It was very joyous, but I'm telling you, everyone in the car was literally, and the marshals that were with us, some of the parade marshals literally doubled over and wept with laughter. It was so funny. And they looked at me and they said, "Well, Sybil, bless her." And I was blessing her. Yeah. I was doing everything I could. I didn't make the sign of the cross. That would have been, wrong. But I did make a sign of a Star of David. It was like, what could I do? And I just waved to her. And then she was swept away by the crowd, like in the last days of Pompeii. I mean, then the crowd was like, "Yeah, your child was blessed. Get out of the way. I want to be blessed." And it was hysterical. Lou Moletta, for years later, and strangers would come up to me and go, "Bless me, bless my child." I would be at a cafe, and people would come up to me 5-6 years later in Greenwich Village at the Cafe Riviera, and someone would walk by and see me there and say, "Oh, Sybil, bless me, bless my child, bless me, bless my child."
That's hilarious. But you know, the genius in what you did and what you continue to do is that your character is non-threatening and always has been.
That's sweet
and
of
it's
you to
been
say.
About fun and celebration and enjoyment of yourself and totally non-threatening like some could potentially be. I mean, frankly, when I watch RuPaul, God love him, at times, some of those gals just freak me out,
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to come up against
them. Well, Michael, that's very sweet of you. But I've got to tell you that the response to my muscles the fact that I wore my own hair, that I wasn't trying to be Marilyn Monroe or Bette Midler or, you know, Donna Summer, the fact that I wasn't lip syncing and trying to be a celebrity impersonator. I was blacklisted and panned and harassed and, you know, ignored. And that happens to this day, is that I wasn't playing by the rules. People said, you have no right to have muscles. That's wrong. You're not being right to the drag tradition, etc. So I think it's neat that you said I wasn't threatening. I think in some ways, though, and Gwendolyn would disagree with you, and so would Wayne, is that Sybil Brunchen is a fairly political character and has become more outspoken over the last 10 years. I mean, George Bush, the younger, and then certainly the Donald Trump years, Sybil Brunchen has become Madame Defarge, you know. So,
well, I can see that.
Let's get off me and get back to you guys. I would like to know, and we only have a few minutes left, but so I think it's neat that we got perspective from different parts of the country and different people about gay pride and gay and lesbian pride, and then also seeing a parade, you know, hearing about a parade. Does anyone have anything else they'd like to add quickly? You know, they're as Chuck Todd does, he says, okay, everyone gets 90 seconds. What else would people like to say as we close the gay pride month?
Let me jump in. So a friend of mine, we went up to the Inner Harbor of Baltimore. Actually, it was actually along the docks. And the New York Dolls perform. I kind of knew of them. I was 20 years old, and it was like, oh, my God, I don't know if I'm ready for this.
Wow.
But it was very good. Yes, no, bottom line.
You know, something that I've been seeing on Facebook, and I participated in too, is a lot of people have told stories about coming out, which is another important part of pride, I think.
Absolutely.
And I've seen some
lovely
ones.
Gwendolyn, I'm going to interrupt you. Gwendolyn, next week's episode will be in July by then. We're going to do – let's do a show about how you came out, coming out stories. So, you know, it won't be Gay Pride Month anymore, but we'll do it as the first show in July, and we'll do coming out stories. Okay, we'll make that agreement. And Wayne, you're invited, but you, of course, haven't come out yet. But I want to. You can come in quickly next week, and you can come out as straight and how traumatic and horrifying that was for you, and, and the horrifying prejudice that came your way.
I'm still the offendy, dirty heterosexual of this group.
Right. As an unwanted and unwelcome heterosexual in gay circles. Okay, and
there you go.
Gwendolyn, go on with what, because you inspired me. Go on with what you were saying, yeah.
Well, no, I've just seen, I've been encouraged recently by some of my friends, especially my hairdresser, who's a brother for years. It's like, girl, you got to get into some of the lesbian rooms on Facebook or somebody. You need to meet new people. And doing that, well, you know, so I did. And I got to tell you, the theme's been pride all month. And, I mean, it's like an endless meet and greet kind of thing. But the pride, the coming out stories are interesting. Some are sad, but most of them are really good. Mine was funny, but you know, it's they're good to know. It's a history.
Yeah, Pamela, do you have anything you want to throw in at the last few minutes here?
I guess I liked where pride had started. I don't like it where it has gone. To me, it's turned more into more of a circuit party. Let's get drunk, let's get high, let's meet some trade, and that's what gay pride's about, when that's not what it's about, and that's why people laugh at us,
because
of that picture that's perceived by the youth that don't want to learn about the history.
I want you to hold that thought, because I want you to call in next week, and I want you to talk about that apropos of the whole coming out. So we're just going to keep doing history. next week. We're going to do history, and that'll be like, you know, about coming out, what it was like to come out when it wasn't okay to come out. And let's bring up the evolution of the gay pride movement, the gay pride parade, and all of that. Can you try and call in next week too?
Sure.
Okay. And then who else do we need to get? I want to hear final comment. Michael, do you have any final comment that you'd like to make?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm so happy and so proud of where I am now.
Yes.
I never thought I'd be here as a gay man. I have a wonderful marriage of 30 years.
Wow.
A wonderful home, great friends all over the world. Had a great career. I'm now retired and really enjoying all of the hard work I did. And I'm able to contribute to my gay brothers and sisters in this extremely gay community at Palm Springs in a way that I thought I would be able to. So,
living in Palm Springs is wonderful too. I mean,
yeah.
It sounds like you've got a pretty nice lifestyle going there, and you've picked the right
nice
town
life.
To be, you know, gay yeah. in. It's a great thing.
It is.
I can't. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was it. I feel like I'm in heaven. I'm in gay.
That's lovely.
So, such a wonderful
I'm looking at the clock, and we have a matter of minutes, so I'm going to take this moment, as I must, as the MC, to thank my panel. I feel truly like we were doing What's My Line tonight with my lovely panel of guests. It was great. Michael, thank you for joining us for the first time. Pamela and Wayne, thank you for being regulars. Thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Yeah, no, it's just terrific. It's lovely also, and I speak for the rest of the panel, to say that we try to keep the show open, and that's why, ladies and gentlemen at home and around the world, we always allow one straight person to wander in and give their cheap 2 cents worth. And then we give them a cup of stale coffee and a fossilized donut on the back porch and shoo them away and say, thank you. There's refreshments on the back porch. Please go. And then the rest of us have caviar and champagne and a lovely party. So, Wayne, you still are loved, though a second-class citizen. You are very much loved as long as you stay on the back porch.
That's right. As long as I know where my place is in this society.
And, by the way, you've worked your way up from a paper plate to an actual piece of chinette. I want you to know qualify for a piece of chinette.
I'll be fine with what I got.
I have to now sign off, and this is what I'm going to do. You've been listening to Come Now, Don't Sulk, our weekly podcast live on the part of the Here Be Monsters studio on Blog Talk Radio. We are here every Monday night, folks, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7 Central, or your corresponding time zone. Please tune in, tell your friends, and you can call in every week and chat with us. You can join us next week. I want to remind you that our sponsor is daughtersofisis.com. That's daughtersofisis.com. All one word, the fragrant memories of our ancestors and by listeners like you. Thank you. We will see you. We also will see you on Facebook. You can join us on the daughtersofisis.com page or on Sybil Says. That's SYBILSEZ.com. SybilBrunchen.com. And you can join us on the Sybil Brunchen Lollipop Guild page, which is on Facebook. It is a non-controversial, everyone welcome, free admission page where we celebrate joy. Mutual fabulous joy. People post recipes. Pamela is our dean of food, by the way. And then the rest of us just snack. But so you can join us there. We post pictures of cats and dogs and, you know, food and gossip and practical jokes and all sorts of things. Join us on that page, won't you? And I would like to just say thank you, panel, so much. You are lovely. I love all of you for joining me on a Monday night. What a lovely place and way to spend an evening in Cherry Grove, Fire Island. I got to podcast from my little cottage here. So thank you, everyone at home. Thank you, Gwendolyn, for being our sponsor. And thank you, guests. And I will see everyone next Monday. at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, or your time zone. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Tommy.
Good night.